From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Today we have with us our legal counsel, Bruce Moyer. Hi, Bruce. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Bob. Glad to be back with you.
Right. We have a couple of issues that are of, interest to our members over in NAPS world. Number one, we're going to be talking about a new Pew Center survey of the American public on the Postal Service. We're also going to be touching on some new issues with regard to the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, and I think we're going to do a NAPS chat specifically dedicated to the upcoming open season for FEHBP. And lastly, we're going to talk about your impressions of a recent U.S. federal court decision with regard to postal rates. Now, let's first talk about an October 1st release of a survey by the Pew Institute. In that survey, once again, the Pew Institute found that the American public approve of the Postal Service by a rate of 90%. That means a 90% approval rate, which puts them at the head of the class for all federal agencies, Bruce. Does that surprise you?
Well, it surprises me only in that despite all of its problems and turmoil today, that the Postal Service remains the number one trusted institution among the United States government agencies, way, way ahead of certainly the IRS and ICE and other components, but ahead of EPA, ahead of the Center for Disease Control, which I think was there near the top of the list as well. We've known for the last 10 years through the survey work done by, the Panaman Institute out in California, yeah, Bob?
That's for trust, public
for
trust.
For trust, that they have remained high. And this survey, measured by the Pew folks, measured trust and confidence as well, right?
Right. And the top three, interestingly enough, the Postal Service tops at 90%, followed by the National Park Service. And third on the list is NASA. The Center for Disease Control comes in fourth. Now, what's also interesting, Bruce, is they evaluated the difference between what Democrats thought about the Postal Service versus what our Republicans thought about the service. And interestingly enough, or not surprising, the distance between or the partisan gap between the Republicans and the Democrats is only 4 percentage points. The Democrats evaluated the Postal Service at 91%, and the Republicans who were surveyed rated the Postal Service at 87%. That's almost an insignificant difference in how you evaluate the Postal Service.
It's an interesting aspect to think about, that regardless of what party you are and how you fit into this spectrum of partisanship today, that all folks still resoundingly think the Postal Service is doing a pretty darn good job.
And that there's a consistency in that amount, in that number, with regard to members on Capitol Hill. Because we've had Jerry Connolly, the chairman of the subcommittee who has jurisdiction of the Postal Service, evaluate how he evaluates the Postal Service's performance to his constituents, as does Mark Meadows, who was the former chairman of that subcommittee. They both give very high marks to the service provided by the United States Postal Service. Now, that doesn't necessarily translate into a high approval rate for those in L'Enfant Plaza, but it does for the services provided to their constituents. Now, I know it's something that you're very focused on with regard to pay for performance and so forth, but when you look at a 90% approval rating of the American public, would this not translate into some type of paper performance for managerial and ES level employees?
Well, you wonder where it goes from here. The implications for this kind of support reflect not only real trust and confidence in how the carrier operates, but also how the carrier is supervised and how efficiently that's carried out. And it reflects certainly a lot of American trust, but also the need to continue to retain that trust.
And we would expect that next year that these rates would be fairly stable, assuming that the Postal Service management doesn't adversely impact the service that Americans expect and actually cherish.
That's right. So where do we go from here, Bob? Are we going to talk about rates and the rate case, or do you want to talk about health insurance?
Well, let's pivot right now. Actually, let's talk about the rates.
Okay.
Because that'd be a good segue. Last month, the United States Court in the District of Columbia ruled against the Postal Regulatory Commission, who basically accepted the recommendations of the Postal Service to raise the rate on first-class stamps by 5 cents. That is from 50 cents to 55 cents. The court ruled in part that the commission did not exercise due diligence in their evaluation of the rate request, and they simplistically increased rates by 5 cents because it was divisible by five. I think that's the gist of it. Tell me what your take is on that.
Well, not to get too wonky about this, but this case has a number of interesting aspects to it. First of all, the author of the D.C. Circuit decision is a new judge on the D.C. Circuit named Naomi Rao, who went through a bruising confirmation battle. She had been the Trump administration's director of the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs within OMB. Very bright, very dedicated public servant, but certainly with a view towards government and an appreciation for changing some of the rules and changing some of the approaches that government had been taking before she came to OMB as a Republican. So Democrats were concerned about putting her on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which oversees whenever there is a regulatory change or a rule that an administrative agency like the EPA or even an executive branch agency like Health and Human Services, whenever a rule is put out, it can be challenged under various grounds under a law called the Administrative Procedure Act that Congress put in place back in 1946. That requires administrative agencies to go through transparent processes of when they change the rules, to put it out for public comment, to understand and interpret and receive and listen to those comments, and then issue a final rule or a final adjudicative decision based upon the law, based upon the facts, and also taking into account public views. In issuing their decision, though, the agency has to declare its rationale for why it did that. And in this case, as you pointed out, Bob, the Postal Regulatory Commission, in approving the 5 cent price hike for first class postage, which was, by the way, the largest increase in numbers of cents in history, and in terms of a 10% increase, the largest since 1991, the court found that the Postal Regulatory Commission didn't adequately explain why it was approving.
Now, let me hold on that. That doesn't mean that the rate increase was not without merit. It's just that they didn't explain it correctly.
Correct. And that merit relates to the degree to which it is adequately explained. So there are several possibilities here. Bob, why don't you talk a little bit about the different ways this case could go from here?
Well, there is some discussion about whether or not the Postal Regulatory Commission now accepts the challenge by the court to review what it already has done and modify the rate or justify the 5 cent rate. Number two, it could appeal the decision to
full
the entire
11 member court. This decision was written by Rao, but along with two other circuit court judges. But you could, under a process called en banc, that is the entire panel, have it convene and reconsider the earlier decision.
And another option is that the Postal Service could fold this rate increase into its proposal for the 2000 2020 rate adjustment, which goes to the Postal Regulatory Commission this month, to be implemented in January 2020, which means that they will basically accept the decision of the Court of Appeals, but it will become almost moot because they are going to refile a case which will include the 5-cent increase into it or some adjustment of that 5-cent.
Right, right. Another interesting aspect, Bob, of this decision is the fact that coming from Judge Rao as her maiden decision, she is one of those that are considered an apostle of Justice Gorsuch's view that the administrative state needs to be trimmed back. And there's a long-standing doctrine of deference by the courts to the decisions of administrative agencies like the Postal Regulatory Commission. It's under the name called Chevron, Chevron deference. And it refers to the deference that has been found under a list of cases. Scalia, Justice Scalia, wrote the Chevron case that say that courts are bound to defer to the interpretations of statutes when they are ambiguous to the interpretation they're rendered by the administrative agency charged with the responsibility for carrying out the law. Even if the law is ambiguous, you defer to the administrative agency responsible for carrying out. And Gorsuch has said, whoa, that's way, way too much deference to give to an administrative agency. This comes about particularly when you get into very technical and scientific matters, far, far more complex, quite frankly, than the economics associated with the rise of a postage stamp. But nonetheless, they're harbored on the same foundations, and that is that the law requires agencies, when they carry out actions like the approving the request to raise the price of a stamp, that they need to be transparent about it. And this is really the heart of what happened when you think about it, Bob, in the Supreme Court's strike down of the census question, that they found that the rationale that had been found by the Commerce Department was a pretext. In other words, wasn't sufficiently laid out on the merits as to why the census question on citizenship should be included.
And that, as I recall, that was a pretty substantive decision on the census question. I
mean, yes.
It wasn't a 5-4.
No, I think it was 7-2.
Right. So the opportunity or the past precedent to provide deference to federal agencies for the implementation of regulations is coming under increased scrutiny, particularly in the Washington, D.C. circuit where the Postal Service operates.
Exactly. So getting back to Chevron, and even though this case did not disrupt Chevron, it didn't really concern the interpretation of a statute that the PRC is responsible for administering. It was more so how the PRC carried it out. But it folks are wondering, is this Judge Rao's first shot at the cannon? Of the canon at the administrative state, first disrupting the somewhat arcane decision of a small regulatory agency like the PRC. What's next?
Well, this goes right to the fact that in the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act, there was tremendous, I guess, priority by Congress to the given to the Postal Regulatory Commission to expeditiously consider rate increases or rate adjustments, because of the long time that rate cases took to litigate when there was the Postal Rate Commission. This may put a little monkey wrench into speed.
Mm-hmm.
So the Postal Service might have to wait longer now for the PRC to consider changes in service standards, changes in rates, and so forth, in order that the Postal Regulatory Commission will meet the standard that Judge Rao applies with regard to applying particular criteria to rates,
right,
if you want to change rates.
Right, right. There's another interesting angle on this, Bob, and that is how this case emerged. Who was it that challenged the Postal Regulatory Commission and took them to court? It was none other than a gadfly, a watchdog of postal matters for years and years, a fellow named Doug Carlson out of California, who previously has filed numerous petitions to challenge various decisions of the Postal Service in the past. And this is probably Carlson's most largest victory to date in really the fight for the little guy. This was not a big commercial effort on his part. This was somebody who really knew the Postal Service like the back of his hand. And
yeah, but interestingly, when you say that it was just a little guy who sort of made a big issue out of a 5-cent increase, in its concluding paragraph of the decision, Judge Rao wrote, and I quote, "Although the 5-cent stamp price hike may have gone unnoticed by many, the American Revolution was fomented in part by ordinary people who objected to taxation through stamps."
That's right.
And then it points to Carlson fighting against the Postal Service in the implementation of what the court concluded was an arbitrary application of its processes to implement what the Postal Service wanted in that 5-cent increase.
Exactly. That as you pointed out at the beginning, the rationale of a price hike grounded on the ease and convenience of the stamp price itself, that is 55, and a 5-cent easily nickel added price increase wasn't enough as a rationale.
Now, those who listen to us should in no way come away with the misinterpretation that we do not agree that rate adjustments need to be made for the Postal Service.
Correct.
Because there is a significant need for increased revenue. It's just that the way in which the PRC dealt with this request by the Postal Service did not meet the standards that this court, or this Court of Appeals, would apply to the current statute.
And that reference to the financial situation alone was not enough, that there needed to be a more substantive grounded basis.
Yeah, so I think we both would agree that the Postal Regulatory Commission will take to heart the recommendations mm-hmm. of this decision in future rate cases.
And perhaps, as you suggested, take a little more time to the extent it's able. You know, some may say that it was rushed to put something out or to be able to remain within the short time period to permit the rate hike to go into effect by early January of 2019.
Right. Now, side or a byproduct of this decision and the renewed attention that the Postal Regulatory Commission needs to make to this particular decision and the 2019 rate increase of 5 cents is what it does to its consideration of the 10-year rate review, which has yet to be implemented, whether or not this decision by the court in any way will impact the speed and the justification of a new rate regime by the Postal Regulatory Commission.
And the commission has two new members who certainly have some challenging work on their plates.
But fortunately, both of those two new members have considerable postal history and knowledge of the system, so they're not novices.
Right. Both came from the Senate, Ashley Poling and Ann Fisher.
Right. And both Ivan Butz, our executive vice president, and I sort of were there to greet Ashley and Ann as they were sworn in right before the recess, the most recent congressional recess. So we extended NAPS's congratulations to both new commissioners, in addition to speaking with all the other commissioners who were at that event.
Excellent. The ever-present face of NAP.
The last issue I'd like to talk about is something that strikes at the pocketbooks and the wallets of NAP's members, and that is federal employees' health benefits premiums. The Office of Personnel Management this week released its projection of where the average premium of an FEHBP plan for participants will increase by 5.6%. That's an average 5.6% increase in FEHBP premiums. That compares with a 1.5% increase from the previous year, from 2019. Now, On the other side of it, there are going to be 279 plans participating in the FEHBP in 2020, which is an increase of 14 plans. So if any member wants to change plans based on premium costs, they will have ample opportunity to do so during the open season, which will take place between November 11th and December 9th this year. That being said, of the 5.6% increase, around 3.1% is attributable towards medical inflation, increased utilization, and so forth. But they also say around 2%, I'm sorry, my math is a little bit off, but 2% is attributable to the Affordable Health Care Act surcharge applied to so-called Cadillac plans. Those are plans that exceed a certain standard that the ACA, the Affordable Health Care Act, predicts is a nominal or a comprehensive plan. So FEHBP exceeds that level of coverage, and people should be aware of that.
It's interesting that reflects, really, doesn't it, the long-time regard and respect for the FEHBP, and that it at the end of the day stands above the quality of the ACA right. Nominal standard.
Yeah, let me just correct my math now, just to make clear. 3.6% is attributable to medical inflation and higher utilization rates, and the 2% is due to the surcharge, the Cadillac surcharge. Now, FEHBP insures over 8 million retirees, active employees in the postal and federal community, as well as members of their families. So it is the largest employer-provided health insurance plan in the world. And we do exercise a considerable amount of market leverage. And the criticism that a lot of folks make right now is that we don't adequately exercise that leverage to drive down the cost and improve the quality of care, particularly in the area of pharmaceuticals, since that's a big cost center for health insurance plans these days. And there are those who says we should exercise that, similar to the way in which the Veterans Administration exercises market leverage in controlling their pharmaceutical costs.
The whole area of the control of drug prices is something that ever since President Trump stepped into the White House was a possible area of mutual bipartisan endeavor by Republicans and Democrats. There were some early discussions that seemed to be optimistic that some kind of joint endeavor could come about, and even as recently as coming out of the August recess, Speaker Pelosi talked about legislation that would address the costs of several dozen drugs within Medicare.
Yes,
not necessarily FEHBP, but certainly the expansion of that approach to FEHBP certainly would theoretically be out there. However,
there's always a however, Bruce.
the chance, I think, of Speaker Pelosi's program to go forward, even in the chamber that she leads, Bob, I'm not too optimistic about that. What do you think? I think impeachment.
Also, as I say, we're going to find out if Congress can walk and chew gum at the same time. They have a tremendous burden right now with the impeachment inquiry, and it's the challenge is whether or not they can legislate at the same time. Now, up until this point, the House, at the very least, has been passing legislation. They, in fact, passed each and every one of the appropriations bills, and now they're sitting in the Senate, and it's tied up right now. You're right. It's going to be extraordinarily difficult to get a handle on drug prices and drug control in this hyperpartisan environment right now where everyone's at each other's neck.
Prescription drug prices, gun control, both of those issues, with the American public crying out for action by the Congress, and yet nothing getting done.
Well, as everyone could determine right now, there is a lot on our plate. There's a little over 2 months, 2.5 months less to this Congress, to this year, actually, this term of this Congress. And then next year, we enter an election year. There will be a podcast. We will talk about the elections, upcoming elections, which will be a month and 1 month and 1 year from now. So with that, Bruce, I'm going to wish you a great week, and our listeners should come and tune in next week for the next edition of Naps Chat.
Thanks, Bob. Good to be with you.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm going